Thank you for joining us for this episode of ZB Talk, a production of the Zeta Beta Tau Foundation.
This podcast was created to highlight some of the many amazing stories about the brothers of Zeta Beta Tau fraternity.
We, the brothers of Zeta Beta Tau fraternity, believe that the development of the individual as a responsible, mature member of society is the primary goal of the university today.
We believe that fraternity offers to the university community a unique, desirable, and successful means of achieving this goal.
In fulfilling the purposes of fraternity, we dedicate ourselves to the principles of intellectual awareness, social responsibility, integrity, and brotherly love.
What's the hour?
It must be time for ZB Talk. This is Farron Lewitt, Psi University of Alabama, 1997.
And Jonathan H. Levin, Alpha Kappa, University of Wisconsin, 2002.
We're your hosts for this episode of ZB Talk. Guest today is Bradley Perry, Alpha Delta, University of Southern California, 2021, who is an actor known for his roles on the Disney Channel sitcoms Good Luck Charlie, Lab Rats, and Mighty Med. He also starred in several Disney movies.
Thanks for joining us, Bradley.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Bradley, ZBT has an extremely rich history in Hollywood, from actors, producers, directors, talent managers, and even studio executives. How did you get in the business?
Man, my story was kind of funny. I grew up just right outside of Los Angeles, you know, and it's funny if you come to LA, I think it's what people think it is. It's everybody's in the industry somehow. So you somehow know if they're working in financing, in films, whatever it is, they have some sort of connection to the film industry. And my next door neighbor actually at the time was a producer. And then the other next door neighbor was an actor. And I guess it was a very talkative 5-year-old, that they were like, hey, you should try commercials and stuff like that. So my mom and I were like, all right, yeah, let's do it. So drove down and did commercials. My mom honestly hated me doing it at the time because it was like kind of a pain in the neck driving from where I was down to Los Angeles. But I just fell in love with it instantly. I loved being on camera. I loved just kind of controlling in a weird way because it's, you know, as an actor, it's all sort of based around you. So I loved that sensation and I loved being a part of that. And I loved how many people it takes to make, a film or even a commercial. And then so I started doing commercials and then eventually my mom and I decided we would transition into theatrical. So that's when auditions for films and TV shows started. It just kind of spiraled on after that. And I got lucky, you know, I got a gig at 10 years old and then, that company Disney, employed me for almost 10 years of working straight for them. So, I got a lot luckier than a lot of people do, but it was an amazing run for Disney. And that's kind of how it started for me.
That's great. Well, it's a perfect transition. So how did you make your transition from your minor roles to to the lead roles?
You know, it's funny. It's all about the people around you and all about the other actors on the shows, the producers, the content, whatever you're doing. You know, my first job, I was playing the younger brother on Good Luck Charlie. So, you know, I was more looking up to the people above me. And we did 100 episodes. We worked for 4 years and they were all adults. I was 10 years old and then we finished. I was 14 years old. You know, there's all grown adults who had been acting for years and years and years. So any sort of etiquette, any set experience I have is I totally contribute to them because they made me the actor and the person that I am today. Really in a way that it's like, it was like growing up and going to school for me, you know, it was middle school and then high school. And, you know, so I went on to do the next show right after that. And I was the lead on the show. And I had this new sort of responsibility of being that adult because I was the one who had worked in the, you know, there was a girl below me who had never worked before. And, I took that kind of really seriously because I wanted to be what those people were for me on Good Luck Charlie. Those like guiding forces to be those people who just want to work in the industry and who just love the job. You know, because I think oftentimes, you know, we actors get tainted and divas and all that and everything. But at the end of the day, everybody starts acting because they love what they're doing and they love working on sets and they love working with other people. I think people forget that eventually and it becomes about the money or it becomes about the fame. And that's pretty unfortunate. But if you remember the base values of everything, then, you know, the work's better. You have more fun. The content's better. And so I just kind of tried to install that into everybody that I've worked with. And I've tried to bring a good environment into every workplace that I go to.
It's great. And so you've acted on television and movies. Which mm-hmm. is your preference and why?
Man, it really depends. It's it's funny. Working on a 4-camera sitcom, you work on a soundstage. You have your dressing room and, you know, somebody like the Friends or Modern Family, something like that, that goes 10 years, Seinfeld. They're working in the same place. Like it's an office for 10 years and you have your room and you know where to go and you have the schedule down and you're there for this amount of time and it becomes really, really routine. And it's a very comfortable way of working. A lot of people find it like not as satisfying as films because the content may not be as deep and method, but it's a very comfortable way of working. So you show up to the same place, you know what you're doing, you know the people really well. You're not in a trailer. It's just really, really comfortable. But working on movies, I mean, I've gotten to do some awesome things in films and travel. You know, living in Vancouver, Toronto, Salt Lake, Boston for X amount of time. That's an experience that you can't match on a sitcom. It's pretty amazing being able to travel out to Toronto and just pack up and live there for 3 months. And then you say you did it, you know, it's like, you kind of get that experience of living somewhere else for a short amount of time.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, so what's a typical day on a set like, for you? And I'm sure our audience would like to hear that.
Typical day on set, man. It depends. It depends on what you're doing. It depends on where you are. Growing up for me, school was really important as well. So they always try to fit in with child actors, school time. And it's really important for them to send you off. So you still have to do, I think, how many hours is it? It's like 6 hours a day, 6-7 hours a day, fit into your work schedule on top of it, which is a disturbing amount of work, but, I think it's worth it in the end. But, you know, so you wake up, you drive down there on a sitcom. The routine day is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are rehearsal days. Thursday, Fridays are shoot days. So you shoot the whole episode on Thursday and Friday. And you nail it, get it down Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But the rehearsal days are the best because you go in, you're in sweats, whatever, wearing a hat, doesn't matter. And you just practice it, you get it down and that becomes your routine. And that became our routine on the first show I did for 100 weeks. And, you get into such a good rhythm that you can start to slack off on the Mondays and they'll go, eh, maybe we don't even need to come in on this day because you guys got it down so well on Tuesday and Wednesday that we don't even need it. So that's a typical day for a TV show. And you know how many hours you're going to work on a TV show. For a movie, I mean, you do night shoots, you could roll up at your call time could be 10 at night and you leave at, you know, noon the next day and it's bizarre. But it's a fun experience. This I worked on a Adam Sandler film last summer right before school started, and they were 15-hour work days, you know, what would seemingly be tired, but you're just not, because you're having so much fun and the people around you are having a great time. But, you know, our call time were literally like 3 in the afternoon, and you'd leave at 4 a.m. because it was a night shoot and they had to get nighttime done. So your sleep schedule is all out of whack, but you get goofy and you have fun.
It's great. So this is a two-part question. You mentioned working for Disney for 10 years, and curious as to what the awareness of and responsibility to the primary audience of Disney projects, being children, what that awareness is with the writers, actors, directors, and the crew. And then the second part is really, how does that awareness, assuming it's there, impact the work on set and life off set?
That's a great question. Actually, I've never been asked that. You know, for Disney, people think it's really, really strict, which it is. But they're only strict because they know their audience and they know the things that they have to do, and they know why they're doing it and why parents allow them to watch the shows that they do. For us, on our first show, it was supposed to be a family sitcom targeted to the entire family, instead of just, you know, a normal Disney sitcom that was targeted for usually like a lead 13-year-old girl or whatever it was, and then, you know, younger kids would watch it. We were supposed to be the show that everybody could watch and everybody could sit down and watch, and that was always the compliment that we got, and that was always the best part of working there. You know, for Disney, they teach you how to be appropriate, then they teach you how to be in a position that you can handle the situation properly. And I will be forever grateful of that, because we live in an era also where, you know, your tweets when you were 13 can really come back and bite you in the butt, you know? And Disney never allowed that. So when you grow up working there, you couldn't tweet those things. You couldn't post those things. You couldn't really talk about those things because they didn't find it appropriate and they didn't want it to tarnish your image when it came to their show. And, you know, because you're working for them, you abide by their rules, and it's fair and it's proper, and that's what's supposed to happen. In the same way that anybody else at a job, if they're getting drug tested, they can't, you know, do any sort of drugs. It was for us, as we couldn't swear, you know, you couldn't tweet inappropriate things. Political topics weren't really necessary because that wasn't the point of what we were doing. You know, so now I've learned a really good filter, and I've learned how to properly speak publicly in that manner because of what they taught me. And you know, when it comes to working, again, like I said, for us on the first show, the content was supposed to be for a family, and that was kind of like the point of it, was we were the family sitcom. So we got to do a lot of things that the parents really enjoyed that were little indie windows that, you know, the kids wouldn't get. But the biggest compliments we always got were, you know, I can sit down with my kids and watch this show as well, and it's the only show on Disney I can do that with. And that was always our favorite thing to hear, because that means we did our job well, while also still being appropriate for the kids, because people trusted our family to give them decent content as well. So, you know, the sterilized version of the whole thing is like, people see Disney Channel as cookie cutter, you know, you can't say this, can't say that. And it's true, but that's their model, and that's the thing they run by, and it's worked really, really well for them.
Great.
You've been able to meet some interesting people as a result of your career. Do you find the thrill of meeting high profile people remains exciting, or, and it's a two-part question. Who have you most appreciated having had the opportunity to meet?
Man, I seriously, I've gotten to meet some absolutely amazing people, and it'll never not be totally nerve-wracking for me. I think athletes, funny enough, are even scarier to me than than actors. I think because like actors, I feel as if we're somewhere in the same world. Like I understand how they got to that point. You know, like I met just recently, worked and spoke with Ben Stiller for quite some time. It was a really great experience. We had a nice long conversation, and you know, we got to talk about film, so we had that in common. So I wasn't as scared. But you know, he was telling me he was a big fan of my show, and that was just mind boggling to know that somebody like that, somebody I look up to, appreciated the work I had done as well. You know, same thing with working with like John Travolta, Robin Williams, people like that. They're bigger than life. You know, they are the best of the best. They're exactly what, you know, we want to be as actors, because they've made it. And,
sure.
You know, it's so exciting. And like I said, when I was working with Adam Sandler this past year, that man has created like an empire, and he works with his friends. Like he does this, like he just does fun movies every 6 months. He just cranks them out, but he's having the best time doing it. And you're like, that's exactly what, you know, I want to be in life, really. But with athletes, I absolutely struggle because I, you know, I'm a diehard sports fan when it comes to most sports, and meeting those people, I don't get them. You know, I watch basketball and you look at somebody like LeBron James and you're like, we are not the same. you and I are nowhere close to the same. We'll never be the same. My greatest memory, honestly, from working, and it means so much more now, obviously, but I got to meet Kobe Bryant, and I'm a diehard Laker fan, grew up in LA. My dad's a season ticket holder. I went to, you know, 10 games a year, 15 games a year, and just watched Kobe growing up in awe. And when I was working on the first show, I did Good Luck Charlie, he came to set, got to meet him, told him, he said how big of a fan he was. He said how he thought I was hysterical. And it was just like the most mind-boggling moment for me, because I'm like, this person who does something that I wish I could do. I always watched basketball and thought, I wish I could play like that. He does it, and he's the best, you know, in the league doing it right now. And he watches my show right now when he goes home after a game. That's just, it didn't make sense to me. It makes sense when actors go home and watch other projects or whatever. But, you know, just hearing an athlete like that talk about it is just so mind-boggling to me. But, you know, to answer your question, I will never get over it. It's always exciting to me and always crazy, because I appreciate what those people do.
Awesome. Well, you speaking of sports, you have Boston sports team, and you actually played the role of the Patriots kid on NBC Sunday Night Football promo. Tell us about that experience.
And yeah, it's
what's the connection to Boston?
You know, it's funny. It's that commercial is actually why I'm a Patriots fan. I did that commercial when I was about 6 years old. And the Patriots were on like their first streak of Super Bowls. Not like they've ever really stopped, but like that first early 2000s streak. And Tom Brady was supposed to be in the commercial, but they ended up having like a playoff game or something like that day, whatever. But so he was supposed to be in the commercial with me, and I played like the young Patriots boy. And so, you know, being from LA, we didn't have a team at the time because the Rams had left in what, the 90s or whatever. And so I didn't really follow a specific football team. So I did this commercial for the Patriots, learned about Tom Brady, whatever, just kind of became a fan of them. They gave me all like the memorabilia that was in the commercial. They let me take it home, and it was amazing. And I had it in my room for like 15 years. But, yeah, so I became a Patriots fan through that. And then I grew up playing baseball. I seriously kept playing until I guess I was 16 years old. So I played while I was working. I would go home and continue to play. It was like a very important thing for me. I always wanted to be a baseball player. But so I didn't like the Dodgers. I grew up in LA. I'm going to be honest, I didn't like the Dodgers. At the time, the Dodgers now are so different than what they were before. But I went to Boston with my family just on a vacation, and we went to Fenway, And if you're a baseball fan and you're not in the right direction of a team and you go to Fenway, you fall in love with that place. And it's the most amazing ballpark. It's so historical. It's beautiful. The Red Sox were decent at the time, and I just kind of started following them. But, you know, I keep it at Red Sox and Patriots. I'm a Laker fan. I don't like the Celtics. I'm a Kings fan. I don't like the Bruins. So, you know, I separate it. But it's funny because I pick, like, the two biggest rival cities in sports.
Sure.
Right, right. And so I was hoping that you were going to say that the reason you were a Patriots fan is because of brother ZBT, fellow ZBT, Robert Kraft.
ZBT?
He is a ZBT. So
I had no idea.
Absolutely.
Well, that's my answer now.
There you go. One thing I want to go back to is you mentioned working with Robin Williams, and obviously that had to have been an amazing experience. Tell us a little bit more about that experience.
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, as far as comedy goes, as far as acting goes, he's the pinnacle, you know. And it was amazing to watch him work and watch him do comedy and then instantly turn it off and just be a seemingly normal person sitting on set, you know. I was so young when I did that. I wish I was older so maybe I could have picked his brain a little more. As far as somebody like that who's was just a comedic genius. But you know, he was amazing. He was amazing to work with. I had a funny story, man, from that shoot though. I was in that movie, did quite a few bits, whatever, was really excited about it. I got to like back talk Robin Williams. We had like some comedic bit together, and it's like, that's like the dream come true, you know, for a comedic actor. So I'm telling everybody about this, right? I'm going like, I got this amazing bit where Robin Williams and I go back and forth doing some comedy, you know, whatever. I go to the premiere. I go with a friend of mine who's on Good Luck Charlie. I'm telling him like, you know, I'm so excited for you to see this. Like we get to do jokes back and forth. Doing the red carpet interviews and everything. I'm talking up how excited I am for people to see me do this comedy with Robin Williams. I go into the premiere. Every single one of my lines was cut. Every single one of them. So I was just basically featured extra is what I was. I was in the background for too much of it, basically. And I remember watching it thinking, are they going to come back to it? I'm hoping they come back to this scene, maybe somewhere down the line, and I'm talking. I was so embarrassed because I had just done all these interviews saying, you know, how I have this amazing comedic bit with Robin Williams and how lucky I am to have been able to do that. And I got to imagine all these, like, you know, people from press, Entertainment Tonight, whatever, NBC, whatever it is, walk into the theater and go, that little shit was lying. What is he doing? You know, like, he just totally made up this bit. What are we talking about?
Well, hopefully you're able to get that off the cutting room floor and keep that.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
So you, switching gears here for a minute, you described in one of your interviews your Mighty Med character as he does before he thinks, and that was sort of his behavior. And that behavior is obviously common in young people who feel invincible. What can we learn from your character?
Oh man, you know, I think you hit it on the nose though with that's how that young people feel. You feel invincible. It's a funny thing. I felt that way for sure for the longest time. You'd never think you're going to die. You can do whatever you want and you're going to be fine and you just live without consequences. And that character, he was fun to play because he did whatever. But the thing about that character was his best friend was like, we always described it as Kaz was the gas pedal and Oliver was the brake. So anytime Kaz would want to go do something, Oliver pulled him back. And you kind of need that person in life. Especially if you want to just go jump into something, you have to have that person to pull you back and go, all right, hang on. Let's think about that for a second. The funny thing is I was always that person. I never wanted to get in trouble. I never wanted to do anything stupid. I was like the most goody two shoes with things like that. Getting in trouble in school always made me like unbelievably uncomfortable. You know, but if you're going to be that gas pedal, you have to have the brake, or you at least have to learn how to use the brakes, you know? And I think a lot of people live their lives, especially at a young age, not thinking about consequences and not thinking about, well, what's going to happen later. And I do have to contribute, like, my behavior and my fear of doing something wrong to working on Disney and not really having the leeway to do something stupid. So I always worry about that now. And it's, you know, it's funny with school and, you know, if you have fun, I'm 21 now, you go to a bar, like you're drinking with friends and whatever it is. I'm always on edge because I'm worried that like somebody's filming me. I'm doing something wrong. I'm a legal adult. I have really nothing to worry about, but I'm still freaked out that somebody's going to be, you know, seeing me. So I have never, in my recent years thought of being invincible, because I think I've been shown that we're quite the opposite.
Sure.
Speaking of the future, how long do you plan to act, and do you have career aspirations outside of acting?
Yeah, so I think kind of the main reason on why I went to USC and why I really wanted to go to their film school was I've spent my whole life acting, and I love it more than anything, and I will do it for however long it allows me to do it. But I really love film and television, and I really love people making TV shows. I love them making films. I was always the kid on set who was watching other people work because I thought it was so interesting. And I never really saw my position as like a lead on a show or a lead in a movie as important as, you know, somebody who's doing lighting or a key grip, something like that. Because when you work on a set and you examine everything that's going on, there's not one person who could leave that day and that set will work as smoothly. You know, everybody is so important down to a stage PA, you know, everything is so important and it's systematic. And that's the thing that I love about it so much. So I went to school to learn how to produce and learn how to understand that side of things, because, you know, with acting, there's a lot of sitting around too. There's a lot of time periods where, you know, you work for 4 years and then you're not working for 2 years or even longer and you're waiting for the next role. And I'm not good at sitting still. I've never been good at that. And I like to hopefully bring the work to myself. So that's why I went to school to learn how to produce, learn how to write better. I got to direct on the last show I did. I did like one episode on Lab Rats. And doing that, I realized how important everybody was, but I also realized how much I needed to learn. And I always thought I knew everything because I had been working on 100 and whatever episodes of television, but I really didn't know anything about it. And I didn't know how to control a set. I didn't know what lighting did. I didn't know what, you know, the camera coordinators did. I remember thinking like props came up to me and was like, does this chair need to be red or blue for the scene? And I was like, I don't care. Why does it matter? It's a chair. Who cares? And they're like, okay, well, we'll go with this one. And then on the day of shooting, you know, somebody walks on the set and their superhero costume is blue. And now we have a blue chair. And I'm like, oh, I probably should have thought that through. Like, that's something I needed to have thought through, you know, sure. But I didn't think in that way. I didn't think of those things mattering. And then I kind of realized, I was like, I want to do everything I can to be better at this and learn more. And I do feel like I know, I mean, you can always get better, of course, but like, I know how to act, you know, I know the fundamentals of it, that's something I can come back to and I want to keep doing. But right now I need to figure out how to do this other side of the work too, because like I said earlier with Adam Sandler, like, he makes films with his friends. He hires people he likes. His acting friends are always in his film. And that is the dream, because I have so many friends around me who are amazing actors who are struggling to get work right now, or amazing writers who are struggling to sell any projects right now. And if I can figure out a way to get those people to work, then, you know, I've done everything I want to do in my life, because that's the best part of the film industry is working together and having fun on set. And that's something that separates our business from any other, I feel like.
So talking about people that you work with and care about, I imagine your work on Good Luck Charlie coming to an end and no longer seeing those people on a daily basis that you worked with regularly for years is somewhat like what many have experienced as a result of the pandemic, people getting furloughed, people losing their jobs and really having no indication that it was going to occur. How did that change with Good Luck Charlie impact you, and how might you advise people in dealing with that kind of change?
Yeah, man. So I got lucky after Good Luck Charlie. I'm not even kidding. We finished filming our last episode on a Friday, and then we had Saturday off, and then we did promos on a Sunday. Monday morning, I had a table read for Mighty Med, and we started right away working that week. So then I worked for 2 years on that, and I didn't have a day break. So then we did 2 years of that, and then that show transitioned right into Lab Rats, and that show combined with them. So we had like a couple months off as a hiatus, and then we picked up on a new show. But after Lab Rats ended, it was the first time in my life that I didn't have work planned after that. Fortunately for me, I was 18 at the time, and I was like, okay, well, this is perfect. I didn't go to, you know, a normal high school. I did online schooling. I didn't have that experience of being around people. I'm going to go to college. Like that's what I want to do. And I want to learn more, and I want to go to a school and join a fraternity like we're all doing here today, and meet amazing people. And that was the important thing for me at the time. But I fell into this endless mind cycle of going, well, why aren't I working right now? Like, this is frightening. I've never not worked in my life. What am I doing here? I don't know when I'm going to work next. It's a weird thing for an 18, 19, 20-year-old to be worried about as far as income goes, too, because I'm sitting there going, well, I'm not making money like I used to be making anymore. Like, is this how it's going to be for the rest of my life? So it's something I was frightened about. When in reality, you know, I lived at home. I didn't have any payments. The only thing I had was taxes. You know, it was like, I wasn't really spending money. It was fine. But I'm fortunate for that time though, because it taught me to worry about those things and to not be comfortable with not working. But it is scary. And I think that's what a lot of people are going through right now is the fear of, well, when am I working next? And that's what I fell into as well. And I was only 18 years old. I had the option to go to school. A lot of people are in a position where, you know, they have a family to take care of, and it's scary. My sister got furloughed, and she's supposed to get married next month, and I just bought a house. And it's like, okay, well, these are real issues, you know. It's like, just got a loan on a house now. What do? I have a wedding coming up, but this is a different situation now. You know, it's catastrophically different for me when I was 18 years old, because I had the option to go to college. But I'm happy that time taught me that fear, because I think it makes me want to work even more, and it makes me want to know that I'm always going to be in a position of working, which you can't guarantee. But you know, the comfortable feeling of having a job, there's nothing better than that.
How has the pandemic affected the entertainment business in your work?
Oh, dude, it is so weird. It is so strange. And like, you know, you the entertainment industry is such a strange business, and it's so fluent and systematic, where it's just always pumping out content, and everybody's always working. And if you're around someone who's working, they're working 24/7 nonstop, on phone calls, doing interview, whatever they're doing, it's like chaos, really. And now you have all these people who are like, okay, what do I do? You know, you're just sitting around going, I don't know where to go from here. You know, I had a friend of mine, he's a producer, and he does like major, major films. He's working on one of the Matrix sequels right now. And you know, he's a big time producer who was forced to sit at home for a few months. And, you know, we were on the phone one day and he's like, I've never done this and I'm bored out of my mind. I don't know what to do. There's literally nothing you can do, you know, because for writers, now's a great time because everybody's sitting at home. It gives you time to catch up and you can work on whatever you're working on. But you know, for producers, for actors, for people who work as crew members on set, you're like, I don't know what to do. I don't have anything to do. I can't prepare for this. I can't come out of this better because you're like, well, there's only so much you can do from home. But you know, for me, I've been trained to write a bunch. I have scripts lined up that I'm trying to like produce or get off the ground and get funding for. And right now has actually been a pretty good time for that because people are answering their phones and that's kind of uncommon. So you'll get a reply pretty quick and, you know, you're kind of set because now people are more attentive. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how people transition into the idea of, well, maybe movie theaters aren't really the way to go anymore and how the film industry is going to change in that way. And we're just maybe all going to go to streaming and movie theaters will become obsolete because I don't know if people want to sit next to each other and people won't want to go to the theater the way that they used to.
So transitioning a little bit, philanthropy has been a big part of your life. Tell our listeners how you've been able to give back and how important it is to you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That's something that I also have really loved about being in a fraternity as well, is that something that's important, you know, because for me growing up working, we always had avenues that were just set up for us to, as ways to give back and things to do and charities to work for and ways to raise money. People would kind of point you in the right direction, whether it was a manager or an, you know, executive producer, they'd always be like, you go over here, talk to these people, do this, do that. And it just always kind of worked. The thing that I love about, you know, fraternities when they care about philanthropy is they're finding it and they're figuring it out and they're doing the ways to raise it kind of, you know, guerrilla style and figuring it out on their own, which is a total different transition for me. And, you know, you have to be passionate about philanthropy in order to do it properly and in order to actually care about it. And, you know, my biggest thing when I was working, the best thing in the world was working with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, because, you know, you would have a kid come to set who said it was their literal dying wish to meet you and watch you work. And that's like one of the most fulfilling and amazing feelings you could possibly have in your life, because you're like, why me? First off, like of all people, you actually want to see me. But to know that that person cared about you that much and that your work impacted them that much, that makes you want to do better for the community, and that makes you want to give back more because you want to have that impact on people. So, you know, it's an important part of working. It's an important part of growing up. It's an important part of, you know, understanding different living situations. In our chapter, every Wednesday we would go and make food at a homeless ministry. And I went one of the first weeks that I was in the fraternity, and just going down into downtown LA and making food for these people and talking to them. It was a really eye-opening situation because, you know, oftentimes it's really sad, but homeless people get kind of shunned to the side as like, oh, that maybe they're either, you know, crazy or they're on drugs, whatever it is. But a lot of people are just in a different socioeconomic position than we are. And, you know, you have these conversations with them and they're like telling you true and honest stories, because what difference does it make to them to tell you? And, you know, you did it and it felt great and you want to go back next week. And so we would, and we kept going, and it was a really great feeling. But yeah, it's definitely an important thing.
Wonderful. You mentioned being 21, and it sort of makes me think that a number of child actors have experienced difficulty transitioning to adulthood. And you've seemed to have remained grounded and focused and are making that transition a positive one. How have you done that?
You know, I honestly have to chalk it up to my family. I have an amazing family and I have amazing friends, and my you know, my life wasn't just about acting. It was about my family and baseball. And, you know, a lot of people move out from, you know, you move from Florida and move the whole family out here to restart a life so that your kid can act. And that's an amazing thing if those families do that. But for me, it was like, I got to come home every night. I didn't live in LA. I just lived outside of LA. I have three sisters. You know, they're all older than me. So I, three older sisters, I could barely speak in my house as it was. But, you know, like my dad has worked unbelievably hard his whole life to get us to the position that we are in now. It wasn't like me supporting anything. It was him working and being in a great financial position. I didn't have any factors around me that were able to jade me, and it gave me a great outlook because, you know, I just wanted to, oftentimes I would go to work and I had the best time there and I cared about school and I cared about learning. And then I wanted to go home and play baseball. And that's really the thing I just wanted to go do. And I loved that more than anything. So I would, you know, drive home. Exactly. I would drive home just to hear that, you know? And, you know, so I played baseball and it kept me normal. And you're around a group of guys all day that keep you sane, and, played travel ball and would do that on the weekends. You know, and then as far as transitioning into becoming an adult, you know, college kind of consumed me from 18 to now, and I'm in my senior year, but like, you know, it was the most important thing for me. It was important to learn. It was important to go to USC and to be around people my age kind of for the first time in my life, really, and to live out of my house and to experience different versions of life. And the other thing was, I went to school and people, like, you know, people knew who I was, but nobody cared. And it was kind of amazing because, like, again, with like being in ZBT, the thing that I really love most about my brothers and the people around me is that nobody cares. Nobody talks about it. Like, honestly, it's kind of become like jokes at time of like that guy who was on the TV show, because it didn't like matter and it's not important to them. And, you know, that was a great feeling because, oh, this is the first time in my life that I'm doing what everybody else is doing, and it's given me great experiences and I've met amazing people. And that's why I went to college, and that's why I wanted to go to college, was that so if I, you know, write a show one day or write a movie one day, I have more experiences and more topics to write about other than just working on a TV show my whole life. So, yeah.
Speaking of ZBT, how did you become a brother of ZBT?
ZBT was... Rush is one of the most tiring processes at USC, and I'm sure for, you know, most schools. And ZBT was like the one house that I would go to where, you know, I had friends there, but it also wasn't like nauseating conversations of talking to people and doing the same thing over and over again of, you know, one of the, why do you want to join a fraternity? And, you know, I think you should join us because this and that. And there was actual real human conversations with the people in the house, and having friends in there too. It was like really the comfortable place to go for me. And I rushed as a junior because I transferred from community college. You know, so I was in a different position too. I wasn't 18 and going into fraternity and looking really to start my college career like that. I was like, I'm a transfer. I'm kind of a new guy here. I want to hang out. I'm not looking to hang out like with the 18-year-old PC, which I've actually become really good friends with those guys too. But like, you know, like I want to just know people around me, and I want to be a bigger part of USC than just going to the film school every day. And ZBT, out of all the fraternities on the row, was the most comfortable and the most normal people and talkative people. And they cared about being friends, and they They kept their house clean, which is a big thing for me. You know, it's just a surprising thing because you walk into some of the houses and you're like, oh my God, I got to get out of here.
Sure. So, you know, so other than cleanliness, what's the greatest lesson that Alpha Delta ZBT has taught you?
You know, it's going to sound corny, but it really is. It is brotherhood, and it's the friendship that I've had and the experiences that I've, you know, gotten to have in this house was really important for me and really important and the biggest part of being in college, and the sororities that really like our house because we're nice and caring guys and you get to meet girl like as friends, whatever it is. I had to clarify that I have a girlfriend, so I got to clarify that before she hears this and like says, what are you doing meeting girls? But anyway, so, you know, like meeting girls as friends and meeting other sororities and other fraternities. There's nothing about ZBT that cares about being, you know, top fraternity and mixing with the top sororities. And it's, they just want to have fun and they want to be a brotherhood and they care about philanthropy and they care about the people around them. And that's exactly what I wanted, because I think that's a great lesson to learn in life too, is it's, you know, you don't have to be the top of like, you know, of your school to care about those things, because we easily could be, but we just like people and we like having fun and we care about the things. And again, we care about our house too, which is important to me, but you know, it's like, I've had real genuine conversations with most people in that house and have had amazing experiences and have had so much fun with them and have met great people and met great sororities, because of the like-mindedness of we're just here for the sole purpose of, you know, being a brotherhood and being good, caring people. And, you know, they care about, the thing that I love about ZBT too is they care about academics. And if you have class or if you have homework or whatever it is, and there's something going on that you're not able to go to, nobody's going to shun you. Nobody's going to care about it because they know that academics come first. And that's the thing that we care about. I mean, we all got into USC. It's a tough school to get into. It's, you have to be educated and you have to be hardworking to get in there. And it's there. We all understand that you got to keep that up and you have to continue to work hard. And especially for the older members in the house, like knowing that, you know, your time's almost done here. You have to set an example of hard work and then you can have fun after. And that's kind of the best part about being in ZBT for me.
So you mentioned being a senior and curious as to what you hope your ZBT alumni experience provides you following graduation.
Oh, following graduation. You mean like the brotherhood after fraternity? Yep, like,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, stuff like this. This is what I find so amazing, is being able to continue to talk to people and having that common bond and then meeting great people. And I did not know Robert Kraft was a ZBT. So, you know, that's, if I ever bump into him, that's a conversation I can have, you know, like it's stuff like that. And I met, Jarrett Sandler, Adam Sandler's nephew. He's become a really good friend of mine. We met on the film. He was actually a ZBT at USC as well. And, you know, so that was one of those conversations where you're like on set and he's like, oh, I went to USC. And you're like, oh, that's funny. He's like, oh, I was in the film school. And it's like, oh, I was in ZBT. And it's like, you have that conversation, you get to talk about the experiences. And we've had, you know, hours and hours of conversation of going like, oh, do you remember, like, did you do this too? Like, was this one of your philanthropies? Was this one of your things? Did you guys go here? Did you mix with this? And that conversation has been, you know, it's amazing for us. And then it's also prompted us to go, oh, we should write something about that. You know, we should write down that experience and we should talk about that. And you want to keep doing that because you have that, you know, common ground.
So fraternity is often portrayed in a negative light. What are your thoughts on fraternity and the positive aspects of organizations like ZBT?
Yeah, you know, it's sad that they get tainted in the way that they do, because there are amazing aspects to it. And I have not had in my time in CBTU, I've not had a negative experience, and I haven't had, you know, a problem. And if anything came up, it was handled like in our house, and people, we either spoke about it or, you know, we did something about it, whatever it was. And you know, for a lot of people coming into their first years of college, that experience of, you know, going into a fraternity can be, I think, scary for a lot of people because of the tainted image that you get. But, you know, you go, well, I don't know. I mean, I had some amazing experiences. I've had fun with these people. I've met great people. You go, why would we want to ruin that? You know? So it's like, you know, for me, I see it as meeting amazing people, having an amazing experience, having a place to go to. That's the other thing people often forget is like for us, like you go to class, if you have an hour break, you can go to the house. You have lunch, you have food, whatever, you can sit there and study. I've gone there and done homework. I've, you know, I had a class with one of my brothers and we would meet back there and do our homework and then go to class. And, you know, it's things like that that are the absolute positive, and those are the best parts, and the lunches and the dinners where you're sitting and you're just talking to your friends at that point. That's the thing that's important. And I think, you know, you can see it in a negative light, but it all depends on the fraternity itself, you know. And that was, again, one of the reasons why I liked ZBT so much, was that I didn't feel that negative, like, oh, these people feel like they're in it for the wrong reasons. There was never that feeling in my mind, like, once.
So early in our conversation, you talked a little bit about the actors, the older actors who were there for you to serve as mentors. And it made me think of Alpha Delta's example, in that Alpha Delta is really fortunate to have a dedicated group of alumni like Les Mayers, Dick Kaplan, Harold Davidson, who in a lot of ways act as mentors. So what example do they set for you and your fellow undergraduate brothers?
Oh, man, it's just, you know, for us, it's about following in the footsteps and doing the right thing, you know, and also looking up. I think in any situation, if wherever you are, if you have a person who has succeeded in doing either what you want to do or in something that you look up to, it's an amazing example to have, and it makes you want to be better because you want to be like that. And, you know, I would hope that there's, I know a lot of people who are going to do great things in our house. And I hope someday I can be that same thing where people go, oh, he was in this fraternity and he succeeded and he did these things. I want to be like that. Because you look up to people and you know, you don't have to idolize them, but you can aspire to do some of the things that they do. For me, it's funny. Like I was saying earlier with Kobe Bryant, like he had that Mamba mentality. And I always thought that was just specific to basketball. And I thought that that was like, you had to have that in your dedication to be a basketball player. But really what he meant was you have to have that dedication in life, and you have to want, strive to be the best in whatever you do. And I think what made Kobe so amazing was that he just wanted to be the best at what he did, and he wanted other people around him to be the best at what they do. And you could be the best at anything, you know, and you could be the best in whatever field you go into. So having people like you just listed to look up to is important, because you know, it gives you the stars to shoot for. And, you know, like I said, I hope I can be that someday in our chapter to some young kids coming into the house.
Bradley, what is the best piece of advice you have ever received?
Best piece of advice ever. You know, it's funny. I wrote a college essay actually about this. One of like my essays to USC, I think, was about this. And I think you can take this into any workplace, any school, whatever it is, your family, friends. My first AD on Lab Rats, he directed a bunch on it too. He is an amazing human being. His name is Guy Distad. And when I was directing, he was like my right-hand man and was like there for me and helped me through everything. And the advice that he gave me was, It's really easy to gain people's respect, but it's even easier to lose their respect. And it seems so simple, but it really resonated with me because, you know, you can gain someone's respect, you can do something to show the respect, but you have to maintain that. And you can't do something that'll lose the respect, because once you lose somebody's respect, you're not getting it back. And for us, what he was talking about was, it was, you know, if you're directing a show and on Monday you show up on time and you're ready to work and you're excited about the job, and you're prepared, people will respect you and people will follow you and people will trust you. But if on Tuesday you show up 10 minutes late, they're going to go, man, I shouldn't have trusted this guy. You know, and I know I shouldn't have, I put my faith in this guy, and it goes away that quickly. So you have to maintain that level of respect, and you have to strive to keep that respect. And that was something that I always worked on and always wanted to do. And in any other job I went on to after that, I wanted to, on the first day, show people that I'm something that you can respect and somebody who's going to work hard. And then do the same thing on the second day, because I that's important to me. And I think it's important for people to be respectful in a job and to show respect and to have respect, because that's really the best part of, you know, some sort of community. If it's a job, if it's friendship, whatever it is, like, respecting somebody and knowing that you are respected is a really important thing for me personally.
Well, Brother Perry, thank you so much. You are definitely respected, and are a great example of a young alumnus, a young undergraduate, soon to be alumnus. Yeah. And we want to thank you for your time with us. You do truly set a great example.
Of course. Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a fun conversation. A lot of questions that I hadn't really thought about before, and I appreciate it.
And our thanks to Hunter Lang, Gamma Mu, University of Memphis, 2013, for our music and production support.
And as always, it's great to be a ZBT.